In the Middle Ages, during the Inquisition, it was commonplace to take criminals or spies or bad people who had stolen a chicken to punish them by wanting to get them to reveal what they did and why by making them walk over hot coals or holding their feet over a flame. So it was torturous and extremely painful. And that's where we get the expression holding your feet to the fire, which is what Dean Holden is going to do on this particular episode of Grassroots, the Minor Hockey Show podcast. I'm Richard Berkeson, and welcome to the next episode, Holding My Feet to the Fire. Dean, do it, man.
Well, when you said that, two things came to mind. First was the infamous Monty Python sketch about the Spanish Inquisition. And the second thing was, I'm not holding your feet to the fire because you're a bad guy. I'm holding your feet to the fire like a more modern day Anthony Robbins. And you were walking across hot coals to come to some sort of revelation in what's going on with your midget double A hockey club so far.
Yes, indeed. And as I had mentioned before, and I've put it on Twitter or X or Y or whatever it's called, I'm coaching a U18 double A team in Oshawa, where I was the technical director up until 4 years ago and then left. Before we get into that, Dean, I want to read an email that I got. I did share it with you from a guy, and I don't want to mention his name or what team he's coaching, but it was really interesting. We've received a few emails at the show email grassroots at Richard at grassrootsminorhockey.com. And this particular one is from a guy named, I'll call him Gary, and he's coaching in Ontario somewhere. He's coaching a competitive hockey team. It is not triple A, but it is teenagers. So they're between 13 and 17 years old. Not triple A. He was selected to coach last spring, he says. They ran tryouts, selected the team. He listened to the podcast, started listening to the podcast around the time of the tryouts. And his interest was piqued by the teaching approaches that we've been talking about on the podcast. So it allowed him to really contemplate, as he says, his coaching methodology and gave him time to further research how to teach the game to this nice group of kids that he's got. He's been coaching a few years, not a lot, under 10. He's got a great coaching staff, he says. They were short-staffed for practice with just him and an assistant coach. So here's what he did, and here's what he has found. We minimized cone work. I have a guy who keeps asking me if I want to borrow his cones. I keep saying no. We selected drills involving decision making. We put the whistle away as much as possible and allowed the kids to start the drills. Actually, I use the whistle to stop. That's it. We tried our best to not give the solution. He said, we're still working on this. We took breaks with the kids to discuss what worked and what didn't. We didn't fitness skate them, but they skated and lots. I didn't, as he says, I didn't have any board time at all to explain the drill. We just got into it and figured it out. I had one guy when I stopped the practice the other night with about 8, 9 minutes to go in ice time. And I figured, we'd already been on the ice 70, and I figured they'd had enough. So one guy comes to me, he says, are you going to skate us now? I said, no, I don't do that. He put out his glove for the fist bump. Yes. I throw out a puck and said, okay, go play. He said, we did use air quote drills, but put constraints on them, selected drills that mimicked game-like situations. We used over 30 minutes of small area games and kept score with bingo dabbers on the ice. The kids helped move nets, collected pucks, which is I've got my guys doing that. I told them the goalies don't pick up the pucks ever. They see pucks enough during the practice. And the nets are moved not by the goalies, but by everybody else. So he and his assistant coach debriefed after practice about how it went and what we saw. This is what we saw. Kids skated hard. They loved the competition at practice. The focus of the practice was 1v1 with angling and good sticks. I saw good positioning, kids focused on getting stick on puck. Following debrief talk, I saw kids correcting themselves without me giving direction. One kid kept getting puck focused and started correcting himself mid-drill to watch the body. His assistant coach said he had kids getting beat on his one-on-one angling game with Gates and showing a bit of frustration. After inquiring, the kids started to solve the game on their own. After 30 minutes of small area games with the kids skating hard, the kids were begging for one more rep because they wanted to get the next point. We had a lobby full of smiling parents. One parent that was on his team last year went out of the way to let him know how happy she was to see such an active practice. I also witnessed my son, this is the head coach talking, who is not the best puck handler, carry the puck and dominate some of the small area games and even snipe one. So he concluded by saying, I'm not professing to be an expert after one practice, but it has excited me to continue to question our approaches and try new things. I wanted to say thank you to yourself and Dean for the work you are doing on your pod. Please let Dean know that his recommendation to have a copy of the ABCs of Hockey book, that's by Tom Malloy and Johan Atani, has also changed my approach. I've started the year in teaching the principles of hockey as opposed to teaching systems and breakouts. Cool.
Yeah, I know that, like those, and we've got a few of them. I was trying to, I remembered it when you were saying about the recommendation of Tom's hockey coaching ABCs book. But I mean, the level of detail in that email, I love it because it's not, you know, anytime you get any feedback, it's appreciated. You know, and a lot of times it's very generic or general, and that's nice. But hats off to
Gary
somewhere in Ontario in the Witness Relocation Program. Taking the time to, you know, obviously this is a guy who's really challenging himself to become better, and he's obviously very reflective. Everything he said there, the detail that he included, I think it's a great, you know, it's a great letter to read out to other people, and, you know, maybe they'll be inspired by it as well. So, you know, thank you, Gary.
I wrote back to him and told him, and as I'm going to share it here, that it takes tremendous cojones to take that approach as a relatively young coach. Mm-hmm. He's only been at it a few years.
Yeah.
And especially at a it's not in AAA, but it's still teenagers, competitive hockey, to be able to step up and do that, find some success, and seems like willing to do more. So Gary, if you're listening, you're up in Northern Ontario somewhere, feel free to write back on how this has progressed since you started with the team. So now you're going to hold my feet to the fire, right?
Yeah, I think I've got a couple of questions I'd like to ask, because it's, as you said to me before, you know, you're really excited about getting into this, back into the coaching itself, and and you know, to have the opportunity to work with this team. So I've written down a couple questions. I'll read them all out, but we'll go through it here in order.
Okay, just before we do that, I should preface what I'm going to share with you and with listeners about this team. So some information about this team. Now, this is the first time in many, many years that I've taken a team that is not the top dog, like the AAA team, where everybody is under you and everybody wants to be there and they're all going to get drafted and play in the NHL. Or junior, right? Which is an entirely different approach, of course, you know, whether it's junior A or junior C. This team is a real mixed bag. I had no idea what to expect. I didn't know any of the players. I knew a couple of parents, and even then, not really well. I've got three kids who played AAA last year at U16. I've got eight who played AA. Now, this is a U18 team, right? So they're 16 and 17-year-olds. I've got 8 boys who played AA last year at U16 or U18. I've got 6 who played Tier 3, which is Tier 3 or Tier 4, I should say. Tier 3 or Tier 4 competitive hockey, what's called out here A or double B, and 1 who played House League. So 7 boys on this team out of the 18 have not played AA or AAA. Some have never played higher than Tier 3 or Tier 4. So I didn't know them. The tryouts were really difficult because I didn't know the boys and what to expect in game situations. I've done one-on-ones with them already, started with 10-minute interviews with them. I have another set coming up in about 3 weeks, just to get a handle on their profiles, what they like, what they dislike, the approach they like, the things they don't. I think it takes a lot for a guy at 16, 17 to turn to a coach and say, oh, I don't like when you do this. So nobody has said that yet. they have been pretty upfront, some of them, about what they would really like to see, because it's based on where they come from. You know, most have played competitive hockey since they were 9, 10, 11 years old. So they're not new to competitive hockey. The games we've played, preseason games, we played 2 tryout games against an association that spanked us pretty badly. But, you know, in a tryout game, you've got all sorts of guys being given a chance to play who would normally not ever get a chance to play and were not going to make the team. But I figured I made the last releases on the last night. I gave everybody at least 1 game, 3 tryout practices. What was the rush? You know, give them a chance. You know, if they're not going to play, they're not going to play. And, you know, I don't know that till I've seen them in competition. Last weekend, we played back-to-back exhibition games with the full squad for our first 2 games together. It was a dog's breakfast. We were shorthanded. We've got 1 kid got injured. We had another one sick. We finished the game on Sunday with 7 forwards and 4 D. You know, and remember, there's 16 players, 16 skaters. So we had 11, which made it pretty difficult. So we got spanked in that one, 7-1. But, you know, the guys were tired, and it was a real dog's breakfast of a game. You know, they've only played together twice. I'm not making excuses. It's just an explanation. So going forward, how good will this team be? I no way of knowing. There's no, because as you know, talking with the staff after the game, I don't have to worry too much about what the top players, the AAA experienced players, are going to do, because I know what they can bring. It's getting the players, the over half the team that is from a lower level, to bring themselves up to a standard that will be competitive. And there we have it. Let's go.
I think I'm glad you provided the context there. I think the interesting thing will be just because of the heterogeneity of the group. Like, I mean, you've got some kids there, I think you said 7 or 8 that have never played anything above AA. And, right. You know, I mean, you've got a massive spread. And
yes. Yeah.
I mean, as as a teacher in a classroom, when you've got, well, let's just say you've got 16 kids in a classroom, that in itself would be a dream, but, you know, to have so few, but then to have them so widespread presents interesting challenges. You've got to keep the top kids interested and challenged, and you know, you can't destroy the confidence of the bottom kids. So it does present a unique circumstance. I think, though, that what I've found, you know, teaching in the skill academies for many years, we've also had a diverse population. And my instincts are always, I'm worried about the top and the bottom, and I kind of don't worry about the middle as much as the top and the bottom. But what I've found, Richard, is the bottom like I try to task the top ones with some leadership items so that they, you know, help learn some skills and contribute along the way, because they're a little bit more advanced, or a lot more advanced, like a Bantam AAA kid versus an immigrant who puts his shin pads on the outside of his socks for the first ice time. And we've had that in our skill academy. So what I found, though, is by adding some leadership expectations on those top kids, the bottom kids, they seem to actually do pretty good. And because there's more room for improvement, by the end of the year in the skill academy, those kids have improved tremendously. So it's like the ceiling effect a little bit. When you're already very good for your age, it's incrementally harder to rise up a little bit at a time. Whereas if you're not very good and you're thrown into that environment, that big mix, those kids that, are not as good seem to progress faster than the ones that are at the top. So I think it'll be interesting to hear what your overall observations are going to be as the year progresses. But those kids at the bottom, those kids have the most room for improvement. And typically, I think that they, you know, as long as they bring a competitive mindset and they want to get better, they'll be fine. So I think you're going to have a pleasant surprise as the season progresses.
Well, anyway, let me throw in another component that I forgot another factor, I should say, that I didn't mention, which is that in junior, as you know, we have 3-4, and in some cases 5 years. You know, if you're coaching junior you can get the 21-year-olds and the 16-year-olds, which I had. So here we have a 2-year span, which no other AA team or no other competitive team. We're the only competitive team non-AAA at U18. There's no third team that I can draw from. So for instance, for affiliates, I either have to go to the house leagues, who are just getting started now, go to U16 AA, which means I've got 15-year-olds going on the ice with guys who are very close to being 18 if they're born in the first third of 2020 or first third of the year of 2006. So I've got 2006s and 2007s on this team, 2-year span. Only 4 players are 2006s, second year midgets. Young the rest team. Of them and the other 14 are first years. So the team we played on the weekend had the exact reverse. They had 4 07s and 14 06s and no injuries, no suspensions, no concussions. Mm-hmm. They had a full lineup. So the fact that we got, I wouldn't say pasted, but, you know, smacked around a little bit. Some of that is inexperience. And in the 2 games we played on the weekend, I put every single player in every possible situation, penalty kill, forecheck pressure on us, so-called power play, which was a bit of a hot mess. I've always taken the approach, I don't have to worry about the best players on the team. I know what they can bring to the table. I want them to be able to do some other things, but we will get to that. Mm-hmm, but the lower third of the team, I have to give them the opportunities to be able to contribute on a regular basis. So one member of the staff said to me, he asked when we're going to have defined power plays and penalty kill groups. I said, January or February, probably, maybe. You know, we'll see. But when you're playing with 10 forwards and 6 defensemen, somebody gets hurt, somebody gets suspended, somebody gets a 10-minute misconduct or being a goof, all of a sudden, things change in minor hockey. It's not 4 lines like junior. There's this mentality out there that you have to have a power play group, you know, on a 3-line team or a penalty killing group. I find that to be pretty much donkey manure. Will it happen in February? Maybe.
February of 2025, the second year you're going to have these kids. Maybe.
Yeah, right. Like I can't worry about that now.
No. I think it's a really good discussion point that you brought up. I was on a call the other night with a group of coaches from the Pittsburgh area. And the premise of the talk was power play. And a few guys brought clips of power play. And I mean, I went in there kind of blind. I got in because of a friend of mine that I coached midget AAA with, geez, back in the early 90s. And, you know, he's been bouncing around in the NHL and then teaching after he left the league in the US. And I go into this call with five or six guys, and they were showing power play, like great power play clips from the NHL and everything else. And very detail oriented. And finally, when it came time for me to join into the conversation, I just said, I apologize for not understanding everybody's individual context and environment here, but you know, what ages are you coaching at, what level and all this? And so I asked a bunch of questions, and I found out that it was everything from, you know, U13, I think it was U13, U15, U18, and I think USA Hockey does it a little bit different with their age splits. Anyway, my overall takeaway, great group of guys, very committed to getting better. But I push it back to, what is your coaching philosophy? And I think that you started in on this now with what you just said, talking about the power play and how you utilize players when you've got, 10-6 or whatever. It seems to me that, you know, and you and I think have mentioned this before, the NHL is a poor role model for anything outside of the entertainment industry or pro hockey. And yet we try to take pieces of it and we try to mirror it as best we can. And I really appreciate what you said about your answer to this fellow is, you know, there's going to be times like everybody's got to play, and I might not get to it till February, if at all. And I think that I reminded the guys on the call in Pittsburgh that at the end of the day, we're coaching people, we're trying to build capacity. And even though the guys in that call, and even though you're at midget AA, whatever acronym, you know, it could be 18 A's to the power of three, and you can't even fit all the A's on the back of the jacket for the egotistical dad who wants to show that his kid's playing at the top level. It doesn't matter. It's minor hockey. Now, if you're playing in a world championship or an Olympics or perhaps the NHL, now we can say there's a you're playing a performance in a performance environment, truly. The rest of it, I still think you're in a developmental environment. And I think minor hockey, even at the highest level, should be a developmental environment. Mm. And your approach is, you know what, I'm going to play as many people in as many positions as I can to help see if I can build that capacity in them such that when they leave me this year, and let's say you come back and you have some of the same kids next year, you're truly hoping, at least, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, I guess this is what I would be hoping if I was in your situation. If I had 8 eligible kids, or your young team, so let's say if I had 12 out of 16 skaters able to come back to my midget AA team next year, I would hope that based on the experience those kids had this year, fewer than all of them would come back. Not because they didn't enjoy the year, but because they got so much better and they grew so much that they were able to go out and make a higher level of hockey. Would that philosophy ring true with you?
It absolutely rings true. My objective from the get-go has been, is, and will be to ensure that every single one of these 18 guys continues to play hockey next year, whether it's in junior or minor. So the guys who are playing, who are second year U18s, who are out of minor hockey this year, are they prepared to take a crack at junior C or wherever? And if they don't make it, will they continue playing somewhere else? If a kid quits,
exactly.
If a kid quits, we've had a whole whack of kids who did not come back to this team this year because of bad experiences last year at the U18 or U16 level. I'm told, because I didn't see it. I don't know what they had to deal with, but there was a lot of them. I don't know if they choose to go to house league. I don't care as long as they keep playing. I don't want to have the season come around in March at the end and people go, I did not enjoy this experience. I did not enjoy Coach Richard. He's a goof, or he's a dink. He's a know-it-all. He's a blowhard or whatever. That would really upset me. So I've got to really be careful about the approach, because I am an elitist, because I've always coached higher levels, almost always. As I said to one of the guys who's working with me, I said, I've got to get my head out of my AAA junior ass and get down to earth. Okay.
Excellent.
And that's one of my personal challenges, but I want all these guys to play somewhere next year.
Yeah.
Well, I don't care where it is, as long as they keep playing.
I've heard that cliche, and you probably have too. You never want to be a child's last coach.
Right.
And I've taken that approach for many years. And
right.
I know as a coach, you're always going to have people that love you, hate you, and some in the middle.
Right.
But, you know, I think it does go back to your coaching philosophy, and mine just being fun, learn, and return.
Yes.
Meaning we have fun, we learn, and do you come back and play next year, either for me or somebody else? Or if you quit hockey, at least I hope you go back at some point to play beer league, or maybe you leave hockey as a sport and you have to go work, or you have to go to school.
That's a different issue.
Or
that's
you
a
play
problem.
Another
yes.
sport because you can only do one or whatever, but you don't want to, poison the experience to the point where a kid's just like, that's it, I'm done. And we've all heard those stories.
Yes.
So I think it's really important to, you know, with the context that you're providing going into our pod today, is you've kind of laid some of the groundwork, you've shared some of your philosophy. And I think some of the homework questions that I'm about to ask you, you'll be able to shed some more light on some of your experiences to date.
Right.
And
I mean,
really
there's
reflect.
Yeah, there's Dean, there's no question that some of these guys who are doing things now that will lead to non-hockey related experiences in the future. You know, they're working part-time, they're involved in other sports. One guy's an avid volleyball player.
Mm-hmm.
One guy wanted to play football, but the school didn't have a team, or they had a team and started too late. And, you know, there are so many other things that they want to get involved in.
Competing interests, Richard, at this age. It's huge.
Right. If they're leaving hockey because of those kinds of things, then there's no argument.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, I want them to have a rewarding season. So there's a little bit of a delicate balance, to quote that novel by the author whose name I forgot, but there's a little bit of a delicate balance there between, you know, my willingness or want to provide them what I think will make this team better, make them more competitive as individuals, and balance it with, whoa, that's too much.
And I think that's a great starting point as we get into some of these questions, because I tried to pick some questions that would cause you to be reflective and then share with the our three listeners, because I think the
we get more than three. We're getting good listening numbers here, by the way.
We're up to five now, are we?
No. We're well into three digits. No.
Three digits. Holy crap.
Yeah,
all
no
right.
Decimals. No decimals. Yep.
No decimals. Mm-hmm. That was my next question. Yes. So I'm going to pose a couple questions to you. And I took a 3-2-1 approach. The first one was three things that you've learned or discovered about the team or yourself so far. Then two novel approaches you are doing with this group and the challenges, successes, results maybe that you've seen to date. And the last thing is one area or an item that maybe you're not sure about, you know, that you've either implemented already, you're not sure how it's going, or one thing that you want to try to implement moving forward or explore. But, you know, I think it'll come out in the discussion here, these things, but let's go back to the first one. And what things have you learned or discovered so far about the team or yourself?
Not in order of importance, but coaching is, has always been, and looking forward will be fun. I love being out there. No question, it is more tiring for me now at my age, now at the tender age of 47, that it's more tiring to be out there, especially like if I play in the morning and then I go have a 1.5 hour practice in the evening. I'm not moving around the ice, but it's still fun to be out there with the guys and communicate with them and joke with them and so on. So it is still fun. Another thing is, and I've mentioned this to you before, Dean, in chit chats, it is so liberating to not search for drills, because we're not doing drills, with the exception of a shooting warm up. I've done 3 or 4 different ones, but it is wonderfully liberating to not go through the manuals I've got beside me here on my shelf, or go online and find, I need a 2-on-1 drill, or I need a breakout drill. I'm going, the hell with that. As I'm saying this, I'm thinking about the old Robin Williams skit he did in Los Angeles about 15 years ago about the history of golf.
Oh yeah.
And I'm not going to use the word, because the language was pretty earthy.
He goes,
are you going to do this? Are you going to do, are you going to hit the ball into one hole? And he goes, F no, I'm going to do it 18 times. And yeah. I'm going to call it a stroke. F no, so I'm going, you're going to do a drill, a 1-on-1 drill. F no, we're not doing 1-on-1. We do 1-against-1 a lot. So that's been very liberating.
Okay.
And the third thing is finding, as I've just mentioned, finding that delicate balance between the team needs, the player needs, and what the coach, me, thinks, believes, hopes will make the team successful by doing certain things in practice, by taking certain approaches.
That's those are good. I like that. So the first one for you, coaching, it's all about fun. I mean, yep, that was your primary thing. Yep. The thing I took away from that is, you say you get out there with the guys after you've played in the morning with a bunch of other guys. To me, there's a real social aspect there then that's coming out in your
yes
answer.
Yes.
Do you consider yourself to be, like, I'm thinking of what other factors might come into your passion and enjoyment about teaching and coaching aside from socialness? What else do you think would come out?
I think that, as a teacher in for years and a coach, and the personality I take into the public in those roles, is a little bit of a showman. It's a performance art. I'm a consummate wise ass, joking, that I have to enjoy what I do.
Yeah.
So, as an example of the novel that just came out, Dean, that you read, thank you very much. Oh, the Burden God. Of Guilt is available on Amazon. Anyway,
buy it, people. I really do. And I'm not being just, because I'm a friend of yours, but it was a very good book, Richard. And as I've said, I'm waiting for the sequel. So Ted need to get going on that.
Okay. But the process, as difficult as it was, as time consuming and hard on the eyes it was fun. I'm all about having a good time. And I want the guys that are in my class or on my teams to enjoy themselves, even with the frustrations of, officiating or the score, or we're not good enough, or the goalie has a bad day and can't stop anything, all that kind of stuff plays into it. We're playing a sport.
You're not working a sport, you're playing a game.
We're playing a sport, and they have to enjoy the experience. And not everybody will enjoy everything we do all the time. I accept
No.
that. And I can see it in the eyes of some guys who are probably rolling their eyes because some of the players who may have played at a higher level are maybe going, this is really weird stuff. You know, we're doing competition type things. Like, what's the whole idea here? But I'm looking for specific things in these competition based games. And I am already seeing improvements in some players. They're already demonstrating the things that I've set out, which is how to play without the puck. I'm not too worried about the puck carrier. It's the offensive support players and the defensive players. What are they doing without the puck? The other one about it's liberating not to search for drills. I have to say, and I have to keep my mouth shut when I'm in rinks, but it is so difficult watching some practices. It is, and the poor coaches, they're so well-meaning. I saw a practice once, there were 8 coaches on the ice. Saw another one, there were 5 just, you know, in the last couple of weeks. And I don't know what they're doing out there. They're just pushing pucks around. There's no instruction. There's no direction. It's just, let's do a drill. One coach is banging his stick on the boards. One coach is giving grief to the 11-year-old because the pass wasn't on his stick in a 2-on-0 drill. The kid, the 11-year-old, and the coach going 2-on-0 on the poor goalie, and the kid didn't make a tape-to-tape pass. And the coach, you know, said, what kind of a pass was that? It has to be on my stick. And I'm just, oh, my God. He's 11 years old. Like, really? You know? Yeah. Or as my friend Rick Lederer would go, he does 2 reallys. He goes, really? Really?
The really squared.
Yeah.
Rick LeDucker now. And I mean, it's I love the fact that you use the term liberating to describe that feeling, because, you know, that's an awareness I went through, you know, in the early 2000s when I was exposed to John the Columbian. And I mean, you and I have talked. I mean, we've been there. We've both been, you know, drill of the month club and receiving sure. The old fax paper that we had to unwind and jam under a photocopier lid to try to get a paper copy of it. And we'd have all these topics and categories, back checking drills, neutral zone regroups and the like. And and then basically what I did is, okay, here's my hour or whatever of ice. I've got to fill it. I'm going to insert 6 of these or more drills. So we do them, you know, 3 minutes this side, 3 minutes next side, move on next, boom, 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 like an auctioneer, and rapid fire my way through these drills. And if they even looked like it was organized, then that, therefore, I was a good coach. I had different drills, and the kids were learning. And a lot of it was around cones and other toys, and wasn't against any pressure. And then it would come to the game and it'd be like, why does my team look like they have no clue what to do? And we didn't know any different though, Richard, because how we were brought up in our coach certification. So I agree. It's highly, highly liberating, and it's a great feeling to have. I just want to go back and touch on the one thing you said in the first one about, you said, you know, you enjoy a good time. You want the kids to have a good time. You're using comedy and humor. It's a performance art. Do you ever find yourself or question yourself and your use of sarcasm? Is that like, do you ever reflect on that and think, can this player handle the sarcasm?
I have to be careful with that, because that's sort of a staple of my I've been on stage with, you know, doing comedy and written stuff like that. I know I have to be careful with it. So I am very careful with what I say and how I say it. So if I'm giving a player a look that, what are you saying again? The guy has to know.
Really?
Really? The guy has to know that I'm joking with him, because I have to add a smirk. If somebody were to videotape me behind the bench in our Sunday night game, that we were playing out here in the East End. The game we lost 7-1. We finished with, you know, seven forwards and three and a half defensemen, and one guy got guys banged up and everything. I think the video would have seen me smiling an awful lot, shrugging my shoulders an awful lot, joking with the referee one of the referees who I know pretty well, an awful lot. Another referee, joking with him about one of my guys was yakking, and I said, "Is he yakking at you? Because if he is, give him 10. He says, "No, he just needed an escort to the bench to be controlled." I said, "Oh, okay, thank you very much," and smiled at him, and you know, that kind of stuff. So I'm very cognizant of that. I'm very cognizant of this current generation and how sensitive people are about so many things, perhaps overly so, but that's the way it is.
Yeah, it's a good point, because I know I find that I'm a little bit cynical and sarcastic myself.
Yeah. It's easy to be that way, right?
You know, and I really do find I have to catch myself at times with the sarcasm and you know, with my son's team, who was U15 last year. I mean, it's a lot of the humor and the comedy and the things that I find funny are so much farther, I hate to use the word advanced, but just worldly, and then the comments that I would make are funny to me, but the kids are going, what's this guy talking
about? Well, these guys at 16, 17 do recognize dad jokes. So at 12 years old, they probably wouldn't. You have to be a little bit more or a lot more obvious in joking with them. 16 and 17 year olds, they recognize the dad jokes, and some of them recognize puns. And, you know, I'm walking through the corridor one day, I think it was before a game or after a game or something, and I made some comment to one of the players, you know, who was asking me about something with the officials. And I said to him, I made him an offer he couldn't refuse. And the kid just walked away.
He wouldn't have any reference to the movie,
Right. So then he walked away. He didn't quite get it, obviously. So then I turned to one of the guys I'm coaching with, and I said, "It just dawned on me just this very moment that that movie was 51 years ago. Most of the coaches have no clue what that line means unless they have watched the movie, which I have, you know, 26 times.
Well, that's what I wanted to kind of bring in, because I think it speaks to the third point, was balancing the team and player needs. And then, you as a coach and your staff and your understanding about, you know, how you're perceived. And you spoke, I think that just talks about the difference in today's society, and the fact that as adults, we're aging, and then if we come back and we're coaching, you know, in my case, U15, now Devin's U18 this year. I mean, you're coaching U18 this year. There's different, I mean, we're obviously removed from the generation. And I mean, Devin was listening to music last night, and you know, I think it's a lot of rap and hip hop stuff. Like, you know, I only listen to some of that. But it's not near my first choice. But there are these generational differences. I'm like you, a bit of a smart ass, and with the, you know, the movie lines, because I love to throw the lines out there, or, you know, I find these connections and these metaphors, you know, and it's like you referred to it. It's like, you have to pull your own head out of your own rear end to figure out the level of where you're at sometimes and situate yourself. And, you know, it's almost like the allegory of Plato's cave. You've got to get out of your own area and find out what's out there. So have you had any moments aside from that movie line? Like, do you get these reminders that, okay, I've got to make sure that I relate on a different level?
Well, one of the boys brings in, as on most teams, brings in, I was going to call it a ghetto blaster, but I don't know what you call boombox. I don't know. It's a big honking thing that plays music through
his
phone.
Those are the two words that I would use, and I'm not sure we can even use them anymore.
Exactly. So they're not allowed phones in the dressing room. We banned that from the get go. And the only one who's allowed to bring in a phone is the one who's playing the music that is done through Bluetooth onto the boombox. So I joke with him and I said, are we doing the Bee Gees or Elvis today? And he does.
Disco Inferno, maybe, by the Tramps.
I don't know. I don't know if he knows the Bee Gees, and he certainly doesn't know CCR, but he knew the name Elvis. Now, Elvis, is that movie came out, what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. So Elvis is now an historical figure. He's been dead for 46 years, 1977, right? He's been dead 46 years, but everybody knows the name Elvis. But they're listening to stuff like, I'm not going to be able to quote things from Barbie, from the movie Barbie. I don't know if there's anything quotable in that movie. I haven't seen the movie. I don't know. So I've got to be careful about the references. And I know that I need to be able to joke about the age thing. Like, I'm old enough to be the grandfather of some of these guys. So, and some of the parents are, you know, the ages of my kids. So I've got to keep that in mind. Okay. I'm not out there to show off any puck handling. I'm going to say show off my puck handling skills. That's not going to happen. These guys are all much better than I could ever dream to be in the last 40 years, for sure. You know, not when I was 20, but now, obviously. I'm not out there to play. I'm out there to help them improve themselves. But I have to consider what they're looking at. They're looking at a much older coach with gray hair who is doing stuff that they've never seen before. They probably don't yet understand the worth until I can spend more time with them on an individual basis, which will come when we go to a tournament coming up in a couple of weeks and an overnighter at the end of the month. So the perspective is really important. And I have to keep work. I'm working every day at wrapping my head around it. And as I said before, hauling my AAA junior head out of my ass.
Out of your Plato's cave.
Out of my Plato's cave, because that's not where their heads are. I got to go to where they are, not to where most of my experience has been.
So I think that, like, there's some challenges there, but I also think there's a lot of advantages to having a coach, a teacher, a guide, a mentor who has that amount of experience. Do you not?
Well, there is, and I don't know how much the parents appreciate or not appreciate, and I don't really care a whole lot. There are a few
like they might not yet, but I think it'll come out.
Wait till we lose three games in a row, then we'll have a different discussion because the honeymoon will be over. Yeah. But I think they appreciate the fact that they've got an experienced person who is not going to accept certain things, that there's discipline, and I'm trying to get the boys to accept the fact that the room has to be, like, and one little thing, the room has to be kept spotless at the end of the practice.
Good. Good. The Colombian is clapping right now.
We got an email from one of the dads, happens to be involved with the city, works for the city, and somebody in the rink came to him and said, was that your son's team that was in that room last practice? And he says, yes. He says the room was spotless at the end of the practice. Everything was picked up. We've had oranges, we've had bagels, we've had, you know, there's tape, and they pick it all up.
They even pick up the hole in the middle of the bagel.
We leave that on the floor. But you know, that kind of thing, I think, trying to build a culture on the team. But I've always done that. I did that when I was 25. I did that when I was 45. And even now at age 47, I'm still doing it.
Those parents don't know how lucky they are that you're trying to imbue life skills into these kids as part of the building capacity and dealing with human beings. Like, so many places that I've been and been involved with, nobody cares about leaving the dressing room in a positive condition. I had three kids 1 year at an Atom One level. So what is that? That's like
9 years old.
Is that nine?
Yeah. Yeah.
Jesus. I mean, they're not that mature to begin with. Right. But I mean, they thought it was funny to in their own home rink. And I mean, home rink, because it's only serving three communities. It's a private rink. And these kids thought it was funny to try to jam toilet paper and paper towels into the toilet and then flush it and have the water running all over and then deny it happened. And I mean, and just like doing vandalistic things for that age. And I'm looking at this going, I like to throw out new creative words.
Okay.
And, you know, these kids are so young, like I can put some of it off to immaturity, but on the other hand, like, what are they doing? Like, you know, and then there's repercussions. I'll never forget these couple of kids. And this is supposed to be the top level. I mean, these were pretty good little players for their age, but boy, for people, my God, like we got a lot of work to do. And I always try to work on the life skills myself.
Right.
And man, it was a real, that's not typical 9-year-old behavior. You know, you got to call the parents in. And I hope, you know, in hindsight, you know, or as years go on, some of these kids and parents become content with, you know, Richard is not just here to teach my kid hockey. He's also trying to, you know, teach respect for the referees, respect for the room, respect for the game, taking pride in your own effort, that sort of thing. So it sounds like your kids and your parents don't even know, you know, how good they've got it so far.
But well, that remains to be seen, I guess. This is my approach. I'm sure lots of other coaches take the same approach. Like I've told the boys in practice, if you get a penalty in a game, which is going to happen, you shut up and you go to the box.
Yeah.
To steal a line from Slapshot, which they probably haven't seen, you go to the box and you feel shame. But yeah. If I use that line, I'm going to say to them, have you not seen Slapshot? No. Okay. Never mind.
Oh,
don't.
God. Yeah.
But, and I've spoken to the referees before each game. And I said, if any of my guys talk back to you, you do what you
good.
Do. You're not, good. They're not getting defended by me for talking back to you.
Well, I know you've talked about this in the past where you take a lot of great pride, and this goes back into your coaching philosophy that you didn't touch on in our talk here today, but you really do take a lot of pride on not taking penalties and, you know,
being disciplined.
Being disciplined, behaving responsibly.
Disciplined play, yes, right.
You know,
and penalties are a part of the game because of the nature of the sport. It's really.
Yeah.
It's really difficult to control your stick sometimes, and stuff will happen.
Yeah, accidents can happen.
Right. So the
sometimes you need to take a penalty, Richard, because you're going to give up a scoring chance. Right. So you've got to hook somebody or trip them or whatever. Saying hit their head off, but you know.
But the line that I find really annoying and I've never used is stay out of the box. Coaches say stay out of the box.
No.
Don't take penalties. Stay out of the box.
No.
That's absolutely useless. And it's probably just stupid. It's not stay out of the box. Teach your kids to keep their sticks down. Teach your kids to angle effectively. Teach your kids to keep their elbows down. Teach your kids not to hit from behind. Mm-hmm. Teach your kids mm-hmm. all the things they need to do to be effective checkers or chasers or forecheckers or back checkers. And if they get a penalty, they get a penalty. You know, you can't control the officials, or you can't control if the official is a goof. You can't control if your player loses it on the ice. But you can certainly influence their behavior. And so I never say to them, stay out of the box. I remind them, stick on puck, stick on puck, stick on puck. Angle by breaking stride, stick on puck, stick on puck. And I've seen it improve in practice, and I saw it on the weekend in our two games. The guys who normally would try to run someone were much better at controlling their bodies and using stick on puck. And it's going to get better because I'm harping on it ad nauseum. Anyway, let's get on to the next one.
Keywords are very good. So well done with that, Richard.
Yeah.
The two novel approaches that you are taking with this group this season, and are there any subsequent challenges, stressors, any success, any results? What do you have to say on that?
Well, it's hockey, so there are no stressors as far as I'm concerned. It's all fun. But two approaches. I don't call it games-based. I call it competition-based. So going back to my SEEP presentation that we talked about last season on the podcast, everything is competition-based, or everything involves competition, with the only exception being the shooting warm-up, which is, you know, shots from different areas on the ice and, you know, shooting off different legs and so on. It's very hard to get players to try to do things that they're not good at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I said, in practice, you practice stuff. The idea is to, you know, if you're taking three shots on a warm-up, try it off a different leg, that, you know, the leg that is, that you normally wouldn't shoot off of. How is it going to get better if you don't try it? But I can't watch every guy. And some of them I can see trying to do it. A lot of them just don't bother. That's a tough sell. But that goes back to when they were youngsters, you know, when they were 9, 8, 9, 10 years old, where coaches should have been trying to get them to practice things. And anyway, so everything is competition based. Even when we're doing a positional play type thing, like power play, penalty killing, as we did the other night, it's still competitive.
Mm-hmm.
There's no sense doing power play or penalty killing of any sort unless there's some urgency to the play. So as an example, I wanted to show them, I didn't want to show them, but I felt the need, which is the second one here, catering to what they feel they need balanced with what I think I should be presenting them. So we did a little bit of penalty killing, and they all know what a box is. They've all seen it since they were like 9. But in order to make it more challenging for them, I do what's called an overload in teaching. I put 7 attackers in the zone, and the attackers can only skate 2 or 3 strides with the puck. One guy is behind the goal line. So 6 between the goal line and the blue line and 1 behind the goal line. And the attackers can try to score anytime they want. Anytime they want. And the 4 defenders have to defend using the principles that I'm trying to provide them. So it's competition-based. It was surprising how few good scoring chances the 7 attackers got. 7-on-4, you know. And the purpose of the 7 was to force the defenders to scan, to look for other people, because it was easier to find 3 players to see than 1 player to see, because they're all right near you.
Mm-hmm.
Did it work? I guess I'll find out when we get into a game, which mm-hmm. brings me to one key thing.
Mm.
We've all heard the expression, just because it's been taught doesn't mean it's been learned. I'm going to add a corollary to that. Just because it's been learned doesn't mean it can be executed.
I like that. So yes. Just because it's been taught
doesn't mean it's been learned. Which does, I mean, that comes up in various books and research documents mm-hmm. that we've all read. But the next part is about the execution. They may have learned it, but can they execute it in a game? Which I'll find out in our regular season games, which happen to begin tonight, October the 4th. But I'll find out if they can execute some of that stuff. Some will, some won't. Some will some of the time. And some will not all of the time. You know, we've only just started it.
Yeah. Mm. The I'm interested in your terminology there. You've changed it from games-based to competition-based. Why did you decide on that approach? Like to the naming change approach?
Because of the connotation of the words.
Mm.
I don't use that terminology with them. I'm using it with you and with listeners and with coaches. I think as soon as you call it games-based, the way that people translate that is we have to play games. Well, a one against one in the corner and coming out with a puck against a, you know, against a goaltender is a game, agreed. But by using the word competition, making everything competitive, encompasses all the games.
Mm.
It's I'm comfortable with games based. I'm comfortable with competition based. But I think a lot of coaches in the new world of ecological dynamics and coaching
mm-hmm.
will find the use of the word games based misleading. because it hasn't been either explained to them properly or they're not well versed in it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, even though it is
games based.
Hmm. I like that. Like, I guess we need to know our client. We need to know our market. We need to know, the word competition based versus games based. What are the immediate connotations there from most people that aren't fluent in, you know, like a parent or a kid or another coach who's just starting? So they understand what competition is. Games-based might be a little bit beyond them or whatever, right?
I don't do anything in practice, like, again, with the exception of shooting warm-up, that is not competitive in some way, shape, or form in varying degrees of progressions.
How do you find the players have taken to that approach so far?
They tell me they like it because I've asked them. A few of the players in those one-on-ones I did last week, I like the approach. One guy said to me, I've never had a coach like you. And I looked at him, I said, well, I don't know what that means. And he smiled and he says, no, I mean in a good way. Like it's different. I don't want to do those same old drills. I've seen them all.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of guys have said they really like being challenged all the time. But it's getting them to be patient with the process. I don't know how patient they are. I don't know if they will reach a point in 3 weeks where they're getting tired of the approach. So my challenge as a coach is to, you know, if we're doing 2v2 competition-based activities across the zone, in a zone, ring at the line to ring at line, there has to be a reason for taking a certain approach in a game or activity. What do I want them to get out of it? And when I stop them after 6-7 minutes or 5 or 6 shifts or however I'm doing it, what is the message to get across? So small space stuff, a lot of it is stick on puck and body position and scanning. And in the penalty kill, it was bum to the net. You should never be facing the net. Any other body position is fine for now. But will that change in 3 months? I guess it depends on how far we get with this. So that means when I do activities that are penalty kill-like, that, you know, I was thinking of doing monkey in the middle, one against three, like the rondos. Remember the rondos that we talked about with
Marcus Axiom? Axiom would be saying, toss that out. But
right. Yeah. Well, but if we did one against three in a quarter zone, that's a type of rondo, but in hockey, you know, learning to use your stick, how many players can you see at one time? Or is your head on a swivel? Are you committing? Those kinds of things. So I've really harped on a few things in practice about the cues for when to attack a puck carrier under what circumstances, like if backhand carry, pressure it, loose puck carry it, pressure it, bobbled reception of a pass, pressure it. So all those things, these are all principles that I embed in these games, in these activities.
You find it easier to teach principles of play using competition-based activities over traditional pattern drills.
Oh my God, there's no comparison.
Homes and toys.
No comparison, but you have to be patient. And I'm patient. I see the long-range objective, and I don't know. I mean, would I be doing this if it was a triple? If it was U18 AAA, I would, but I'd be far more. I'd raise my level of expectation of what the execution needs to be, because these guys all have a very clear goal in mind. They want to play Junior A or, you know, whatever, and they all think they're going to get there. Well, okay, if you think you're going to get there, that's fine. With these guys, though, I'm less concerned about immediate execution as moving towards, like, there's a progression towards good execution, an attempt. So guys are making, you know, passes on a power play exercise where there's a forechecker they have to beat, and it's not a good pass because it was behind the guy or, you know, too long or whatever. And I don't say anything. What's the point? He tried to make the pass. So, you know, it was a technical issue. I'm not going to correct the technical issue in the middle of practice. Like, really? Really? But the attempt was there.
Well, and I think it's important, like, you just acknowledge that. Like, I mean, that is the most important thing, that they had their head up. They mm-hmm. were scanning. They were mm-hmm. making decisions. They chose a good decision. Mm-hmm. They just couldn't execute it. And mm-hmm. you know what? You've got such a wide-ranging, diverse level of skill. You know, your expectation level is going to vary between players on technical execution. And it's something that isn't to be corrected at that time. So have you had any feedback from the parents on the competition-based approach?
No.
Not yet. Are you going to have any interaction with the parents? Because I know you're publishing on the Oshawa Minor page, aren't you? You're publishing updates on that, like every couple of weeks or something.
Yeah, I haven't done that in a few days. I have to get back to sort of a blog on my views in general on how this is working. I have to update that, but I haven't. I mean, I've got one guy's helping me who's not a parent. Trainer is a parent. The manager is a parent. One other dad has just jumped in to help out.
Oh, good.
So, the guy who is the principal guy helping me has got lots of years of experience as a coach, and he's on board. So the other ones are not
works in progress.
They're not quite sure what is.
Well, they haven't been educated on it.
When do we do the circle drill or a flow drill?
Oh, and, God.
You know,
It'll take time. I mean, it's like you don't know what you don't know, right? And
correct.
But I think that your idea of having that blog, you talked to me about it in the summer.
Yeah.
I thought that was a tremendous idea, you know, and if a parent is interested, mm-hmm. they can go there and read about it. And
mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I do plan to do, the time is a factor, but is to invite the parents to a session in a room. We have one parent taking video that they're putting on Instagram, and just point out the general ideas I'm trying to get across to the players and why I'm taking this approach. It's easy to say that because they're 16 and 17, that this approach works better because they've already seen every drill in existence and all the systems and standing around and doing one-on-ones the length of the rink and all that nonsense. It's mm-hmm. easy to use that as a fallback. But if I want the players to learn to play the game, they have to play the game.
Yeah. Experiential learning.
Yes.
You're trying to get transfer, be efficient and effective. And, you know, like, it goes back to the fun, the engagement, the competition. These are all elements of a successful practice.
Well, there's also the unavoidable issue of score. So if we end up 0-30, because I don't know, I can't possibly predict if I could predict I'd buy lottery tickets. you know, how we will do in actual games with this mishmash of experience. I don't want to say talent because, or ability, because the guys who made the team made it because of their effort, because of their attitude, because there were signs in their play that I thought, yeah, I think we can do something with that. And they were keen as hell to come out. You know, scanning being one thing I'm trying to get the players to do better, which they're not good at. Mind you, in minor hockey, probably most kids are not good at, but they're never taught. Like one of the guys who's working with me, he's on the board here in the organization. And he said, well, they've never been coached. Well, they've been coached, but mm-hmm. it's the same old, they've never been shown before, from what I'm told, how to look for other players on the ice, you know, the four roles as espoused by Tom Malloy and Johanny Walston. They've never been shown that before. Well, that could have been shown to them when they were 8 or introduced. So here we are at age 16, 17, some guys are turning 18 at the beginning of 2024, and they've never seen this before. So trying to create these new habits is challenging.
It's very challenging. I mean, even in our own day-to-day lives or whatever, like, you know, life, I think the one thing I've come to figure out is that life is a byproduct of the day-to-day habits that we, or us as an individual, or that we do and we execute every day. And these kids are no different. Like you talked about trying to get them to develop new habits and practice, because that's what practice is about. And, you know, human beings like to be good at stuff, so they tend to favor to do it the same way that we've done it. Shooting off of the opposite foot is such a difficult thing to
sure.
impress on a kid. I mean, I've tried it. Your motor learning wiring is so, for me, I mean, God, I was like cursing at myself under my breath going, you know, I'm a left shot. Why can't I shoot off my opposite foot? Like, and yet here I am as a coach trying to get the kids to do this.
Right.
You know, and I'm going, my God, how difficult this is. And, you know, I looked up on YouTube the other day as a challenge, just, I want to find another little motor skill that maybe I could try a different way just to put myself in my own place. And it was tying shoes. So when you tie your shoes, you put your thumb and forefinger, you hold it and you wrap the loop around and you wrap it around in a clockwise direction. And this guy was saying, well, that's why they always untie. If you wrap it the opposite way, it won't untie until you pull one of the strings. And I'm going, well, that seems pretty cool. I'm going to try that. And I tried it. Richard, I've still not yet been able to do it because I'm so wired
sure.
the other way. And I mean, I'm slowing the video down. This is tying a lace. Shoe,
a lace. Which we've done since we were five.
There's no pressure on me. There's no defenseman bearing down. There's no score clock with a time limit or a score on. Like I'm going, oh my God. Like, so you're right. Like it is about practice, is about trying to get these kids to inspire them to try something. And it's okay to learn, and it's okay to fail. And you've already said that, where the kid's scanning, and it's okay if he makes a technically bad pass, because the important thing is at least he's got his head up, he's scanning, he understands that's the right read, or one of the better reads, and he just can't do it.
Well, to steal the line from Tarasov, what's important is speed of mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I found myself the other night when we were doing power play penalty killing, standing at the blue line as we were doing this 4 versus 7 overload for the PK guys. And I wasn't paying any attention to the 7 guys on the attack. I didn't care. I told them that. I don't care what you do. Just get a shot on that if you can. If you can beat those 4 guys. And I'm standing at the blue line and I'm shouting out questions. What are you looking at? Where's the guy? What are you looking at? And I found I was talking too much. So then I stopped and I found myself starting again, because it's almost ingrained in me to, you know, to be the sage on the stage. But I wasn't telling them. I was saying, what are you looking at? What are you looking for? Where is he? Is your stick on the ice? You know, that kind of stuff.
Well, you're questioning. You're asking questions to.
I am, but it's in the middle of the. It's in the middle of the play.
Granted.
So, right.
But I mean, those are. I mean, none of us are perfect, right? We're all trying to evolve to get better, and you recognize it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's great, Richard. Like I think that, you know, a couple of things just to wrap on this. I think that you brought up in this last point. You know, you said it wasn't about the talent. It's about the try. And so you going back to Oshawa after 4 years away, like you say, these kids really had a fresh and fair evaluation, because they didn't come with any, you know, preconceived notions about the kids or their parents or whatever. And that's refreshing for those kids. And, you know, we were trying to get Joe Baker on the pod this past year, and just scheduling wise, we couldn't make it work. But, you know, his latest book, The Tyranny of Talent, How It Compels and Limits Athletic Achievement and Why You Should Ignore It. I think that how you describe choosing these kids in the evaluation process aligns with some of the stuff in that book about effort and desire, motivation. And, you know, those are very qualitative features that, you know, it's not how fast are they. We're not putting a stopwatch on them or an accuracy gauge or a VO2 test. You know, we're looking at the raw material that we have to work with. And I think that that really, boy, if you're an athlete in a tryout situation, I mean, yeah, maybe if you're training, you'd like to have some physiological measures. But again, this isn't the NHL. This isn't the NHL draft where we're measuring every quantitative thing we can. This is a bunch of kids who like to have fun and play hockey.
Right.
And boy, that ability to work hard and try, to me, that speaks to coachability. And as a teacher and a coach, there's nothing better than having a student or a kid that wants to get better.
Indeed. That's why. And then I asked myself, if I were coaching the U18 AAA team, or if this was a junior B team or something, mm-hmm. would I be taking the same approach, the same attitude? I would. Because
higher
I think
expectations, maybe
the expectations are higher.
Yeah.
Performance and execution expectations are higher, as they should be, because in junior, especially, winning is a major factor. Like teams die if they don't get one round of the playoffs. You get the home dates, you get two or three home dates, you know. So there's a financial factor as well too. Minor hockey has no, it's never had any meaning for me at minor hockey. Even when I was coaching AAA at the younger age levels, I don't much care. I mean, I care. I'm a very competitive person,
mm-hmm.
but I'm competitive. I think it's tempered. I hope it's tempered. I guess we'll find out after a few games. We talk in 2 weeks and find out. Well, the team lost its first four games. We got outscored 43-2, you know. Well, maybe we're just not good enough.
Well, that happened to me last year. We were in a
right.
division too high. Right. I mean, it was just right. too fast. And we were, right. you know, as Sean Connery would say, taking a knife to a gunfight.
Yes.
Right. But, you know, and ultimately we got moved down a league. And as soon as that happened, right. we were top two, top three right. all year.
Well, so, we, you know, we are those... where we are, and we're not going anywhere.
Exactly.
So.
But yeah. I think that that's the last point I just wanted to bring up. And I think it's a really valid point. It's kind of sad, but it's valid in the sense that it happens. And you've mentioned it a couple of times here today about, you know, well, you know, we're still in preseason. We got beat a couple times. The guys don't know each other. We're young. We've got a very diverse group, several kids that have never played at this level. And like you say, those aren't excuses. Those are the realities of this mm-hmm. situation.
Right.
Right. However, and this is where I love this about Dr. Steve Norris, and we're hoping to nail him down here for a pod next week. But one of the things that he often talks about in his talks on long-term athlete development is the reality, and the unescapable, unavoidable reality, is that parents are great comparers to everything else.
Right.
And because we're playing a sport where there's a scoreboard and a standings are published or whatever, there's always these comparisons and there's always that talk. And
sure.
and one of the most easily measurable and comparable metric in sport is the score and how do you fare with other teams in your league, in your division.
Right.
And maybe in your situation, I out here anyway, double A, triple A, like you're that's where you are. There's no moving up or down. Mm-hmm. You're either the King Kahuna or you're the one that gets rolled over the skinny 90-pound weakling on the beach on the back right. of a comic, right? That gets rolled by the bully. So you're stuck. So you got to make hay as best you can. And it's a sad fact, but, you know, we've talked about it. Winning seems to be a great deodorant, as John O'Sullivan would say, and it masks a lot of things. So as a coach, then, you know, what's going to happen, Richard, hypothetically, like you said, in four games or six games or eight games, if you haven't won, and maybe it hasn't been close. Do you think that are you going to feel that pressure
Nope.
And I'm guessing you will, even though you say it doesn't matter. But are you going to change your approach? Are you
Nope.
going to, like, what are you going to do?
Nope. Stay the course.
Yeah.
I mean, if, as a teacher, and I go into a classroom and I've got 25 students, 15 of them have a pretty good chance of getting between 50 and 60%. I can change their mark, or they can change their mark 10% maybe over the course of a year or a semester. You get what you get. I've got what I've got, and I'll do the best I can. I may make some tweaks to the approach to adjust what I see as being highlights or lowlights of what they are doing or not doing, or handle or don't handle. I know specialty teams will be an issue. Some of the guys really have a clue what to do because they've got that experience behind them. A lot of them have never seen any of this stuff before, are very unsure of themselves as a confidence thing. So as long as I keep their confidence up and stay positive, I can't let the results completely color how the team needs to be led. It may put a different shading on it a little bit, but their confidence is really important. We have a lot of hockey in the month of October. We have a tournament. We have, an overnighter coming up at the end of the month. And stay positive, guys. Stay the course. You know, we're not going to change things just because we got waxed a few times, which could very well happen. I really don't know.
Again, I think, and to close, I think that if the parents were to listen to this, or the kids, and hopefully other coaches like the elusive Gary in Northern Ontario, and our other nine listeners or whatever, or maybe 109.
Yeah,
I think
more
that,
than that, even.
I think that, like, what, like, my takeaway here to the listeners is that, you know, Richard, because of your age and your experience, you're bringing, you're very comfortable in your values.
Yes.
You're very comfortable in your philosophy.
Yes.
You're not going to be, you're not, there's not going to be any knee jerk reaction, to a win or a loss, or, you know, heaven forget it, forbid a tie if they even exist anymore, but you're going to stay the course. You've got that experience behind you about, from the teaching thing, the curriculum, and how much kids can improve, and I think that no matter what happens this year with the outcome, I think that the kids are in good hands, and I think that a lot of the stuff that you've said here today, I hope the listeners pick up on these little details and the idiosyncrasies, because I think there's a lot to be learned from people like you in these positions. You have answers right away. I presented these questions to you essentially not even 10 minutes before the pod, and you're so comfortable in your own philosophy, and you know yourself. I think that I'm going to be looking forward to hearing how the season goes and what your learnings are through the year, because I think the kids are going to have a great experience.
Well, being comfortable in my own coaching skin as I am comes after coaching for decades. As you are. I wouldn't expect somebody who's got 6 years coaching experience.
No.
With his kid he had him at age 6, 7, 8. Now he's got him at age 11 after 6 years with only his own child. I defy people who yak about coaching minor hockey, and because of all their worldly experience and knowledge and, being guests and on shows and whatnot, who have never coached other people's kids for, let's say, 5 years. Coach other people's kids first, then we'll have a talk.
And coach other levels, other genders, other...
Yes, right. There's one guy, I saw his website. I can't remember what it was, but perhaps it's just as well. He had coached 2 years of minor hockey, AAA, 2 years, and his website was all about advice for minor hockey coaches. 2 years coaching experience at AAA. And he's giving advice about what parents should do or what coaches should do. Well, that's very nice, but I'm sorry, you don't have the chops to be able to provide that kind of advice, because the minor hockey world is so vast and so deep, and the experiences that parents have and kids have are so vast and so deep. There's no one size fits all. There's no one thing people should or shouldn't do, except maybe, you know, throwing things at the referees is probably not a good thing, I'm going to say.
Well, I think good coaches are open-minded, and they're always looking to find ways to get better themselves and for their team. And they'll explore lots of different things. But I think the core thing here is that you know your values and your philosophy, and you're going to stick to it. And you might tweak some approaches, but I think it's important. And know yourself, know your philosophy, and experiment and reflect. And I'd like to finish on that. I think that that's exactly what you're talking about here today. And hopefully more people can take those characteristics away and apply it in their own setting.
Well, holding my own feet to the fire, because you've held my feet to the fire throughout this chat. I am my own worst enemy. I'm very critical of myself. I come away from a practice going, why the hell did I say that? Why did I do that? Why? Like I had one of the parents take video with my iPad, I should say.
Your iPad? Is that a new technology that I'm not aware of?
Yeah, it's an Apple.
Branching out to singing and stage now.
It's an Apple storage thing. No, I use my iPad to take video of some of the stuff we were doing in practice the other day. And I bring the players in. They're looking at this iPad. The five of them who are closest to the iPad can see it. And the 10 of them who are standing in the back, they're probably not seeing it, or, you know, doing God knows what. And I thought afterwards, okay, now I have 23 videos of about 20 seconds, 30 seconds each. I'm going to have to find a way to get those to the guys and give them some instruction on what to look at. But doing it on the ice with an iPad with a 12-inch screen, what was I thinking? Did I actually think that the guys in the back of the room are going to pay attention to what's going on at the front with a 12-inch screen? You know, a couple of them look at the heads and they're kind of leaning to the side. Now, that wasn't good. You know, I've got to find a better way to get that video message across, because video is very important. So I come out of every practice going, why did I do that? Why did I say that? Why did I take that kind of approach to present that principle? I'm very critical of myself. I'm told a lot, Richard, you're very hard on yourself. That's why I never won a marathon, Dean.
Why? Because you couldn't bear to not finish first.
Because I, you know, I'm going, well, wait a second. I'm over 4 hours. I have to cut that in half in order to win a marathon.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, that wasn't going to happen at age 50. No, no, no.
Yeah, no, but you're doing the right thing. Like, I think more of us need to be critical. We just can't beat ourselves up over it. But making notes every time and trying to get better, that's key, man. That's key.
Yeah.
Good.
Anyway,
I think it's good, Richard. Well done. I think more coaches out there should take that reflective approach and realistic, not beat themselves up, but question themselves. And if they did, I think the game would be in much better hands.
Thank you for that, old boy. We will bring it to a close. Those of you who have comments, and it's a lot more than three or four. We're well into the three digits.
Richard, well, you know, I'm enjoying some of these emails that we're receiving. People talking about their own experiences.
Yeah.
And I mean, keep it coming, anonymous.
Gary up in Northern Ontario, we want to know more about what you're doing and how you're doing it. So my email is richard@grassrootsminorhockey.com. We have some guests lined up the next couple of weeks, which should be really interesting. Hopefully they come through, but I appreciate you listening to the show. Dean, thank you for holding my feet to the fire. We have some interesting music to close off the show, just as we did to start the show. To listeners, thanks for listening. And as always, I will see you in a rink.